Cougar. Welcome to the commentary track, a Kamen Rider podcast. I'm your host, Jared.
I'm Cody.
And I'm producer, Jed.
How's it going, boys?
Miss Cougar already.
I know. What have you done to fill the void?
Lots and lots of Helldivers 2.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, my sleep schedule's been suffering mightily because of that game, but it's really good. You ever want to play an ODST, or it'll drop Shock Trooper dropping into either the front lines of the Terminator franchise or the front lines of the Starship Trooper franchise? You can do either. Yeah. And wear silly hats while doing it.
Do enjoy silly hats.
How about you?
So, have either of you heard of a musical artist called The Stupendium?
No.
I have been, for the last few weeks now, just fixated on their music. They're nerdcore. Most of their songs are related to video games. I technically was introduced to them back in December because they did a song for Game Theory, the channel.
Mm-hmm.
And so I gave that a listen. I was like, oh, this is pretty good. And then didn't check out any of the rest of their work until a couple weeks ago. And I have been listening to basically nothing else nonstop.
Nice.
Just a couple songs to toss out as ones to give a listen to. The House Always Wins, which is about Fallout New Vegas from the point of view of Edwin House.
Hmm.
So good. There's some scathing political commentary in there.
Ooh, my favorite kind.
Some lines I absolutely adore. Along those lines, for The Outer Worlds is the song The Fine Print, which, interesting. Both of those were made by Obsidian. It's like they know how to do really good commentary on games.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last song I'm going to recommend is called Ad Nauseam, which is based on Deltarune, which I have never played.
Same.
But it's a patter song, and I adore a patter song.
That's really cool.
And apparently, some people have done the math. He does more syllables per second and words per second than Eminem did in Rap God.
Uh-oh. That's a dangerous place to be. You never want to be between Eminem and any of his titles.
He's a faster wordsmith, apparently.
Don't say that too loud.
But give him a listen. His stuff's phenomenal.
That's spectacular. Yeah, I'm reminded there was one I found not too long ago. Like, me and mine, we've been stuck on that Has-Been Hotel soundtrack because I finally found a good musical again. So that's going to become my entire personality for a while.
Well, imagine my shock.
But in addition to that, kind of on the same note, Jay, there's a newer artist, Stim. I actually found them on TikTok. They make music that's based upon video games and the feelings they evoke. And they've got one in particular that's based on Elden Ring called Fury. And it is spectacular. Cannot recommend highly enough. So we're going to have to link up and trade after this.
Sounds good.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to discuss post-mortem our experience with Kamen Rider Kuga. We're going to go over a couple of different things. We're going to discuss our supporting cast. We'll give out some superlatives, discuss some of our favorite moments, and then we're going to do some looking ahead. Before we actually launch off, I'm very impressed. If I could be the first to give like an overall impression of the series, what I didn't see coming and what did really affect me in a measurable way were the actual human interest subplots. There were a lot of these that tackled some very intimate, very personal, and very complex emotional conundrums that don't have easy answers. I'm constantly reminded that this is a show for kids, right? But still, consistently, episode after episode, we dealt with very personal things in very mature and rational ways. And that was really cool to see. We see good morals presented at a very high level, a very high black and white, good and evil sort of level. But these discussions of wrestling with yourself and wrestling with your own doubts, and it's okay to have those. Talking about loss, identifying grief, seeing that the world has changed, worrying about the future and what it means for you and your family and whether you should have a family, given, you know, the state of the world and the way things are going. A lot of these are very, very personal. And each one, I think we all had at least one of these subplots that really hit close to home for us. And that's the hallmark of a good set of writing. Is that everybody can engage with the medium and everybody takes away something that is visceral for them.
That's fair, certainly. I was a little hesitant at first, given the age of this particular show. You know, a lot of stuff from our childhoods doesn't hold up. And when this came out, we genuinely were the target demographic.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been really impressive to see this and been like, man, 12-year-old me would have loved this. And I still do. There's so many good takeaways. Like you said, so many subjects that were tackled that, you know, Western media wouldn't dare to. It's been a great experience. And I think for starting off this podcast, our first season, we couldn't have done much better.
The first time I watched Cougar, I would have ranked it much lower. But this time I appreciated it so much more. And that was in part for watching it with you guys. This show will forever have a special place as the first one we covered.
So I guess it's on discussing our secondary characters.
We're ranking the characters that show up in most every episode. Starting off with Ishijo. I think my feelings have been made clear throughout the season. He's my favorite character. Of course I have to give him a 5.
Yeah, I think he's getting a 5 from me as well. The series would not have been the same without him. And I think that's one of my baseline criteria for the higher tier ratings for secondary characters. He supported Godai throughout. He actually got a couple of kills himself. His investigative police work saved a lot of lives. He's a great character. Very strong, very compelling. It was interesting seeing where he broke down emotionally and where he didn't. Those were very telling and humanized him. He had soft spots that weren't necessarily where people expected. And I like that.
Yeah, he's an easy 5 to give. In any other season, he would have been a writer as well, given his importance to the show. Not really much more to add to it.
Sakurako was integral to what little history we learned. She was Godai's staunchest ally, maybe even more so than Ishijo. And while there were a few scenes that read as romantic, I applaud the writers for not reducing her to a love interest and instead just letting her be Godai's friend. And after her running through that cop barricade to shout poetry at Godai about how to use dragon form, I think she earned a 5.
So yeah, if we're going off the criteria of the story does not work without the character, it certainly does not work without Sakurako. I think they did somewhat overdo it with her questioning Godai throughout the course of the series so many times. I get towards the end with the prophecy and all, but particularly in the middle when they kept coming back to this, like, so he had assuaged your fears, but I guess not really. I found that a little tedious, but she's still a great character and a 4.
I think I'm going to put her at 4-5. For me, she doesn't quite scrape the same top shelf Ichijo does. I wish she'd been a little more liberal with the manual. She decoded that shit. She didn't share it. But all jokes aside, you're absolutely correct. Throughout some of the middle there, it did get a little grating how frequently we were having to spend screen time reassuring Sakurako that things were going to be okay. But she was their archaeologist. She's the one that helped them understand what was going on and move through things. And she was still a very compelling character, as irritating as she could have been at times. So she's 4-5 for me.
Tsubaki, my creepy boy. My favorite character from my first watch. And I still like him this time, despite Yuto's best efforts. He is a major source of information, and Ishijo's main confidant. He's could be replaced or dropped, but the show is better for him. 4.
Actual Zodiac Killer Tsubaki.
Criminal offensive side eye.
For me, he does also hit a 4. I would argue he's about the same importance as Baruba. Like, the story could be told without him, but it would not be the same without him. He gave us a lot of our scientific insights and our medical insight about Godai. He was used a lot as a device for understanding the stakes for Godai physiologically, and that's very important to us. He helped Godai power up twice. That was pretty cool. But yeah, all in all, a solid character, even if he was trying to wear Godai's skin.
I'm so tired.
Had to get one last one in.
See, it is that serial killer vibe that makes him so entertaining. Otherwise, he's just a doctor spewing knowledge.
Standing in ankle-deep water.
He's fantastic. I enjoy every interaction with him, creepy mannerisms included. 4.5 for me.
Oh, we haven't been saying a composite score so real quick. Ishijo was a 5, Sakurako was a 4.5, and Tsubaki is a 4.16 repeating.
Feels about right.
and Nakaido is, I think, the only character, except Toshijo and Goma, to really have an arc. As the son of a single working mom, I really appreciated her story. It's a struggle a lot of people, especially women, face. And for the complexities of that situation to be handled earnestly and thoughtfully in a children's show was fantastic. And Nakaido is a 4.
Yeah, as much as I'd love to rag on the whole situation, like, it really does just go to highlight the complexities of single parenting. Especially if you're doing something that's truly, truly important. She's saving lives. It'd be the equivalent in our modern day. Your parent is a doctor. Not only the primary breadwinner, but actual lives are in their hands. There is no easy answer. There is no one-stop band-aid fix to just make it go away or make it better. It was a honest and very earnest look at some of those conflicts. And it helped bring the series back down to that personal level for us a little bit. Her war crimes are beyond reproach. 10 out of 10 would violate and contravene the Geneva Convention. So yeah, I'm going to go with a 4 for her as well.
I mean, it's been no secret that her story has resonated with me the strongest out of the three of us. You know, I'm not even a single parent, but still constantly dealing with how much of Bug's life I miss by being at work and putting myself in the position of, what if there wasn't Dove, it was just me? And what would that be like? I'm being biased here. I'm aware that this isn't going to be a objective look at her, because I feel objectively she probably is around like a 3.5 or a 4, but I'm going to give her a 5 for the resonance.
None of us got in this to be objective, let's be honest.
That's a 4.3. Moving on to Minori. I keep going back and forth between a 4 and a 3. She's not overly relevant and doesn't serve much narrative purpose, but she isn't a bad character. In the end, I think I just want to like her more than I actually do, so I'll settle on a 3.
There's a trope in media where all personality traits need to be represented, but they need not be represented by the same character, and I think Minori suffers from that. We had emotional investment we were supposed to feel for her, but we felt it in other places, and it kind of made her redundant. You know, she was Godai's sibling, she's Godai's family, but we really felt the family angle from Hops, right? That, like, inclusive embrace, like, this is your place that is home. So Minori's story has always felt kind of like they detracted from the story rather than completed it. Polpol was where we went to be grounded. Minori took us off track. I'm going to give her, honestly, feels bad, but I want to give her like a 2.5. I'll give her a 3.
I'm sort of in the middle of the two of you guys. I like the color she adds to the world, and we got so much joy out of the absurdity of the small children. And without her, that wouldn't have happened. We would not have gotten the box Oni. You know, we will never forget. And it will never forget us, unfortunately.
Yeah, Jetty's going to walk into the room one day and the box Oni's just going to be in the corner.
And I think that's worthy of at least a 3.
That's a 3 total.
Perfectly average.
I think I'll catch some flack for this, but Pops is only a 4 for me. He was a structural necessity, being our main comedic relief. But he was kept mostly separate from the plot, and as such he doesn't matter much in the end. At least until the last few episodes where we see his concern and understanding of Godai in a way no one else does.
I agree with the 4. I think Pops is a solid 4. He was there to be comedic. He did a great job with that. He did help ground Godai, and I am very appreciative of that. But he's not quite like Ichijo level for me.
I'm actually going to go with a 3 for Pops. One of the things I'm trying to balance is how much I enjoyed a character versus how much utility and or plot relevance they had. And Pops is exactly what we were talking about. He's a necessity. He is grounding for the show. Him and Polpol as an extension of him were home base for us. It's where Godai goes to rest. But I think we did suffer from trying to split that positive emotion amongst too many secondary characters. We just said it with Minori. I think she kind of overlaps some in terms of her purpose in the story with Pops, and I think it kind of takes away from both of them. Very much enjoyed him, but I'm going to go with a 3.
Pops gets a 3.6 repeating.
Everyone give it up for America's favorite fighting Frenchman!
Gene doesn't do much for the main story, basically being supporting cast for other supporting cast members, switching from Sakurako to Inakata. His relationship with Inakata helps boost his score. He may not be important, but I have fond memories of the plum-obsessed goofball foreigner, 3.5.
Yeah, and these rankings don't necessarily denote, you know, how we felt about them in terms of how much we enjoyed them. Jean was a very enjoyable character. He was also a very useless character. I'm going to give him a 2. He only really had relevance because of his relationship to other characters. He is truly the Waluigi of Kuga. His importance is dependent on the existence of other characters that dependent on the primary character's existence.
Jean-Luigi.
Jean-Luigi, yeah. Mais non. What? But yeah, like, he was a secondary character in Inokita's story. He was a secondary character to Sakurako. He was there to have plot points bounce off of him and to point things out to other characters. Scooby-Doo could have done it better. So, he gets a 2.
I don't really have much to add. Chekhov's plums will always go down as a legend?
Mm-hmm.
3.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
That's a 3.
How dare
Maybe
you?
Maybe higher than he deserves, but...
I almost want to rate Sujita and Sakurai together just because they feel like a package deal a lot of times. You could probably drop them from the story without affecting the plot, but the show would lose something without them, I think. However, I rate Sakurai a little higher because I feel like we got a better idea of him as a character. Things like him keeping a diary of Kuga's fights and liking bread. Little notes that just made the character feel more real. A 4 for the 04 fan.
Aw. I'm actually going to put the Wonder Twins together as well. They very much so.
No, Jed's ranking them separately.
Oh, okay.
But I, too, had the thought to put them together.
Yeah.
Sujita, on the other hand, didn't get that much development. The only thing we really know about him is he's a dad. And that scene of him apologizing to Godai was really nice, but he didn't come out of the background as much. So he gets a 3.
Yeah, I'm actually willing to give both of them a 3-5 together. I feel like they had a very grounding presence in the story. In the same way Pops was there to bring us back down to Earth and the human level in our off hours, they were there for the power scaling. And we talked about this. We understood immediately that the game had changed when Sugita and Sakurai took down one of the Grongi. So them being there as a leveling force was a very, very good thing for us to have. They allowed us to extend our caring throughout the police organization a little better, gave us some eyes in other places. You're right. We would have lost something with not being there, but I wouldn't say they were particularly useful. So 3-5.
Jed, your thing about keeping a diary of Kuga's kills and loving bread.
Jared loves bread, and he's got a ledger.
I do love bread, and I have the Grongadex, which... not in the physical form, but I have created a digital form as well that maybe we can put up on the Patreon or something like that.
Producer's note, the Gurungi Dex is available for free on the Patreon.
That does, in fact, not only list all the Gurungi, but how they died. Are you sure you're talking about Sakurai and not me?
So I think we give Jared a 3-5 as well.
It was fascinating watching Sakurai come into his own. I wish Sugita had gotten it as well. I think of them as a pair, and I think both of them deserve a 3-5, same as what Cody said.
If you average my score for them together, you get a 3.5 as well. So 3.5 to both of them. Nana, oh Nana. She was awful. Her only standout trait being once Godai's dick and bad hair choices. Until the episode about her audition. She stepped beyond her shallow character after that. Too bad it was only in the last 8 episodes. Still, those last 8 episodes brought her up to a 2.
Yeah, I can't really add more to that. She was basically a non-entity, an annoyance, up until the audition, and I cared for her in that moment, and afterwards found her slightly less annoying. A 2.
Truly the goal we can all aspire to is for those around us to perceive us at the end of the day after traumatic experiences as slightly less annoying as we once were. 1 was completely unnecessary. It's kind of harks back to the thing I was saying about Minori and Pops, where everything that she brought to the table was represented in a different character and in a better way. She gets a 1, her hair gets a 9. Because it was willing to take so many risks.
None of which paid off, but...
But they took them.
Yeah, you're right.
That's a 1.7.
And even that's generous. Is that with hair weighting?
No, hair weighting puts her at like an 8.
And finally, Nozomi started out being like Nana, but for Ishijo, until she took her shot and was turned down. Then she just became a bridge bunny. Which was an improvement, but that doesn't say much, a 2. Even as an apology for mixing her up with Nana, it's the best I can do.
Yeah, you were really down on Nozomi when we started this series.
I combined my memories of her and Nana.
Truly an insult to everyone involved. Nozomi, to me, is... What's that character from Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, the I guy?
Alpha 5?
Yeah, she's Alpha 5. She doesn't do anything, but she's there to help tell everybody where they need to be. So, I guess a 2? She's fine. There's nothing wrong with her, but she's a necessary piece of architecture.
Yeah.
Truly a load-bearing radio woman.
She was annoying until she wasn't, and then she was just the dispatcher.
Yep.
I don't want to give her less than Nana, because that feels insulting.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah.
So I guess I gotta go with a 2 as well.
Yeah. You're a non-entity, but you're not a bad character.
Yeah.
That's a 2 overall.
All of those feel pretty right.
Yeah. So then, now that we've ranked all our characters, I guess we're moving on to some superlatives pointing out.
Superlaxatives, yeah, I have that here.
God, I hope not.
Oh.
Starting with Gurungi, other than Daguva. Our best dressed Gurungi was Godal, with a composite score of 5.
That would be our best design. And oh, okay. Yeah, Godal was spectacular.
Special nods to a couple of the other ones throughout the course that had pretty stark designs. Hermit Crab Homie is one that will stick out for all of us, I think, forever. Like, that was a rare marriage of design and aesthetic, like, utilizing the concept entirely. And it's one that I think, honestly, might have set the bar for us a little high for the rest of the series, because that's what we were expecting going into the rest of it, and we didn't really hit it again. So, like, Godal was ranked high because his armor, his aesthetics were just cool and powerful and all that. The Hermit Crab was one of the last times we saw somebody whose design and kill tactic and visual aesthetic all married into one whole. That was something that really stuck out to me, and I'll remember that Hermit Crab for a long time.
Yeah, I think he was so put together. Godal specifically, he got the bonus for the form changes, even if they were subtle, but they went for it with him. And, you know, he's got probably... Other than Daguva, because the Stark White with the black and gold is just, you can't go wrong with that. But he's got the best paint scheme for his monster form.
Yeah, Godal really had some respectable views to him. I enjoyed him a lot.
Godal also wins the Best Personality Award, again scoring a perfect 5.
That makes sense. We also had some weighting issues there, I think, right? Because we didn't have a standardized amount of time with each one of these characters. So we got to see more of some, we got to see less of others, but he was one that we consistently got to see personality from, and it fleshed out in a way that was actually something that was appreciable, you know?
Yeah, I don't necessarily think that one's a recency bias or anything like that. He had a strong personality, and it was strong in ways that the other Gurungi weren't, and that was more appealing. You know, he could have been the big bad in his own series. And yeah, that's really cool. I don't really have much more to say than that. I get why we gave him a perfect 5.
Yep.
The Gurungi most likely to succeed is Garima, with a composite methodology score of 4.5.
Not a single Gurungi got a perfect 5 from all of us.
Nope. Nope. Which one was Garima?
Mantis.
Oh yeah, Mantis was really freaking good.
It wasn't the first time that we'd seen a sort of restriction, but particularly the novelty of it being this specific train car that they have pheromone scented, and then just the sheer chutzpah of walking down the street in broad daylight with your sword and you're already dead.
Mm-hmm. Don't turn around.
And best all-around Gurungi goes to Bada with a combined score of 4.6.
I didn't tilt the scale at all.
No, you sat on it. Nah, he really was, honestly, one of the most iconic and most memorable. Like, I'll let Jared talk about the aesthetics, because that's your digs. But, you know, he threatened Kuga in a way that not many of other villains had so far. And kind of like we were talking about, he set his own benchmark in terms of behaviors with regards to Kuga.
Yeah, I don't think it's wrong that he ends up so high overall.
I mean, what is there to say that I haven't already said? The fact was, he was charming. The only Gurungi to be charming. He posed a genuine threat. He was on a level that we did not see again until Godol. Because even as high as we appreciated Jalaji, I would not rate Jalaji anywhere near Bada. From Bada's death until we got to Godol, it was at least, and I know I'm biased, but a somewhat slump in quality there.
Hey, you two should kiss!
Just kiss him on a bike.
Our average monster score was 3.3.
For the first season of the new era? Yeah, that feels right.
Yeah. We were a little more generous. Well, at least I was a little more generous with some of the early ones than I probably would have been given the benefit of hindsight. So that might weight things a little bit, but I don't feel like that's a bad thing.
I think slightly above a 3. We've stated before, comparing it to Time Ranger and GoGo 5, there certainly were much better monster designs being done at the same time, but they're fine. They're passable. Some were more effort was put in than others.
Yeah, you could tell which ones were the passion projects for sure, and which one are, we need 5 more Gurungi.
But they did also feel cohesive. A thing I will point to towards Time Ranger and GoGo 5 is they don't all necessarily look like they belong to the same thing. It's like, yeah, we had a bunch of cool designs, but the cohesion isn't quite there like the cohesion was here. And I don't think that's something we really ever gave credit to. In fact, we kind of talked down a bit about it, you know, belt, diapy. But those touches did show that all of the Gurungi were Gurungi. They belonged to the same group or the same race. And wanting the bar to be higher isn't wrong. But I think we may have, you know, slipped a little on appreciating the cohesion of all of it.
That's fair. That's valid to say. Even through Kuga's design, they were aesthetic choices that just carried us all the way throughout the series.
I'm honestly surprised, cause coming in I thought they were horrible. I appreciate them more now, especially when I focused on personality.
I mean, there are some that are just terrible looking back. Like, if you take Spider-Man and you compare him to Godol, not even to the big bad endgame boss, but to Godol, like, it's night and freaking day. I'm going to give credit now on something we've been critical of. We frequently question, like, the fur on that character's shoulders, that was a bit of a weird choice, or, like, that aesthetic didn't really make sense. But when you think about it in the broader context of all reflections of Dagova and Dagova's aesthetic, some of those choices start to crystallize into something that makes a little more sense. You know, maybe it's not that this is necessarily reflective of the thing they're emulating, but it's reflective of their species as a whole and the aesthetics that their species adheres to as a species.
For episodes, our favorite story was the three-parter Crisis, Archenemy, and Indomitable, with a dramatic total of 4.7.
And that was the Godol?
That's art? Godol.
Yeah, that makes sense. We got to see form-changing Gurungi. Like, there was a ton going on there. That makes complete sense. We're barreling towards the endgame.
I do wonder if the episodes preceding had been better, if his would have ranked so high. Not to say that those episodes were not spectacular, because they were, but I know that I appreciated them even more because I did not like Zalazu forward.
It's an interesting question to ask. I do feel like Godol was still very, very strong in his own right. I do feel like you could cut Zalazu out entirely and lose nothing. You'd lose nothing in the series. But that being said, I think it stands on its own merits.
I was not as bothered by the preceding episodes as you guys were. And I still ranked it a 5.
Fair.
Our best looking episode was a tie between Tremble, Emotion and Decision. Kuga with the perfect cinematography score of 5 out of 5.
Gonna have to refresh my memory on which one Tremble was.
Tremble and Emotion was Jalaji.
Okay, yeah, that one was both one of the most visually unsettling and the one that did some of the best visual storytelling.
Yeah, I can still picture so many of the scenes of those two episodes perfectly in my head. you know, I'm looking here because I have the list of every episode's name, and I might be able to remember a thing or two, or at least which Gorongi, and thus can make up what happened, but, tremble and emotion, there's so much of that still so clear.
Yep.
And then Decision and Kuga, yeah, I mean, you know, we watched that one more recently, but visuals were perfect.
The best fight is a tie between the three perfect scores of Decision, Kuga, the three-parter Crisis, Arch Enemy, Indomitable, and Obstacle, Cooperation.
Obstacle Cooperation.
That was Bada.
That was Bada.
The best bike foo in the series.
That was really good. I still think it goes to Crisis, Arch Enemy, and Indomitable. Like, Bada was awesome, but I feel like that Tripper Tight even beat out the endgame boss. Like, for me, those are stronger fights.
Honestly, I think all three of those, yeah, there's a reason we gave them perfect scores.
Yeah.
They are perfect, no notes.
Yeah, yeah. If we're ranking them above each other, they're all three at the pinnacle. We're talking decimal points.
Yeah, they're all three S tier. What order we put them in, I think, is subject to each of us.
Yeah, S point what?
The highest rated episode in total was Crisis, Arch Enemy, and Indomitable with a composite 4.8.
It really did feel like the series peaked. Not to say that the Dagova stuff was underwhelming, but it really kind of felt, I hesitate to even say epilogic, but...
There was something about the fact that we spent an episode and a half of Dagova's two-part on Godai saying goodbye. Right. And I'm not going to say that it was the wrong choice to make, but all three parts of Godol were Godol.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, I think Dagova benefits as well from that, because having the moment where Baruba and Godol were talking and we realized that not even Godol can see Dagova clearly. That was, I think, the most menacing Dagova got, where even the other Gorongi cannot look at him.
Yep.
And that was before he started, you know, setting people on fire with his mind.
Our overall episode score for Kuga is 3.7.
That feels pretty right.
Yeah, that does. Again, for the first, we were aiming for 3, because this is where we're setting the bar. For it to be higher than that, good on them.
Yeah.
It had high highs, but there are some low points.
That's true. And that averages out to a pretty consistent show.
Yeah. I'm curious, what was your least favorite moment? Is there one in particular that sticks out that you were just like, this didn't need to be in this?
Zelazu.
I think it is Zelazu. Like, not even that it was bad, it was just unnecessary. But in terms of, like, bad.
The first part of Janoga before the upgrade just being so, yikes.
Yeah, that was fairly uncomfortable.
Episode 2 of that story arc did a good job of turning Janoga into something better. I don't think it completely saved it, but yeah, that first was... Ugh.
That one, but also the second Junichi story.
Yeah, that also felt unnecessary. I think if I had to pick one moment of just like, that was really bad, and I wish I hadn't seen it because it made me stop taking the series seriously in that moment, just took me out of it entirely, was the first time he got a ride from the Goram while holding the Pew Pew Vikavolt, where he was like literally
He killed Galma.
Yeah, his feet didn't even shift to point down. They just were still like he was standing somewhere, and they just cut and pasted his fucking Photoshop off screen. It was like, oh, I'm out immediately. It broke my immersion. Like, that was the standard for bad CGI in the series.
That was probably the worst CG moment in the entire show.
Before we move too far, in case anyone is wondering, I mashed 11 out of 26 Gurungi.
That is...
a third. Nope, less than. 11 out of 26.
I can't decide if that is more or less than I thought.
It's more than I thought, honestly. Jetty's pretty discerning. And there were a bunch of audibles where it's just like, absolutely not because X, moving on.
Yeah.
Kudos for knowing your own boundaries.
That's 42%.
Would smash 42% of the time. I think you can officially dispense with the idea of like being identified as a monster fucker. I think if you had landed on greater than 50%, we'd be having a discussion. But under 50%, you know, that's within normalcy for sure.
Let's see what happens next season.
He has a thing about sapience, so I think we're going to be fine.
I mean, he said the bit will continue into next season.
The monsters next season are called Lords, and they show the barest level of sapience I will mash, and this time there's no falling back on human designs. It's just a question of will I fuck that bondage chicken?
I'm assuming we'll know when we get to the bondage chicken.
It's kind of hard, I would think, to misidentify a bondage chicken.
Oh shit, that wasn't the bondage chicken? Oh fuck, who did I just talk to? What's next? What we got next? Favorite moments?
Yeah, it's our time to reflect. Favorite, least favorite. You know, if I don't mind taking a moment, this is not a particular moment, but just a sort of in general thing. I felt a lot more emotions watching this show than I would have thought I would. Even having seen some other Kamen Rider, I don't feel like I quite got as emotionally invested in the characters as I have for this one, and it's really impressive for the writing and the performances. I still think about the phone call between Tsubaki and Ichijo, where we don't get to hear Ichijo's side of the conversation, just the sirens and him in the car. The acting that went into that is still a favorite moment of this show for me. You guys saw, and I'm sure the audience could hear, I teared up a few times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, had to apologize for trying to collect myself. You've heard all of the laughter. It's incredible the range of emotions that this nominally children's show has been able to pull out of me, a middle-aged man.
We talked about Jared's resonance with Inokaida, but I have to say Junichi's first story was Tet for me. I have been there, I have been that low, and so it just got me.
I don't know, the Jilaji moment, when Godai finally gets a hold of him, transforms as he's diving through a window with him, and then proceeds to beat him to within an inch of his life and drag him off. The physicality of the acting in that sequence was insane. And it honestly, it left me with questions for the rest of the series. Like, if Godai is still the type of character that can be redeemed, that moment made me doubt if the story with Godai ended well. And that's really good storytelling in a series where ostensibly for the rest of the series, we've been pretty confident the good guy's going to win. It's the good guy always wins, but like the corruption of the good guy and the breaking of his spirit, that's something that hits different. And just the physical bodying in those moments, I was hooked. I could not look away from the screen.
I was so stunned by that to just pummel Jilaji. The first time that we have seen Eigo Rongi damaged and bleeding and cowering, and then for Godai to not just defeat him, kill him, but to literally butcher him. He guts him just before the belt explodes. And then I think the moment that was even more for me was the few episodes later when he is calmly recounting that to Ichijo and Sakurako, and he mentions that he planned to kill Jilaji right there in the courtyard of the police station, not caring that Sakurai and Sugita and Ichijo were there and would have been caught in the explosion.
Yep. It's rare in such a episodic and predictable show like this, where good guys win, bad guys lose, it's pretty black and white, for you to have a moment that creates that kind of doubt in the main character. And I think that was superbly done. I don't know if there's been another moment in a show where I pretty much knew the good guy was going to win from the moment I started watching it, where I can remember doubting that that was the course we were on as thoroughly.
This has been great. I really don't know what else to say in regards to Kuga.
I want to thank both of you. Like I said earlier, doing this with you two has made this show something special to me. And I'm so glad we did all of this.
For sure. I'm glad we could move up Kuga a couple of places on your rankings. And I had fun. For me, this had just the perfect amount of camp to severity.
Yeah, no, this was spectacular. I mean, unlike you, Jed, I have yet to watch any Kamen Rider by myself. In fact, everything I've watched has been with you. I'm so looking forward to continue this and seeing these other series.
So I guess on that note, tell me about our next project, Agito. Now, not same universe, correct?
It's complicated. We'll talk about it in depth in next week's episode. But the short version is that it happens in its own universe.
G3 is the slim connection to Kuga? Sort of. But this one will have... There are three Kamen Rider. Agito, obviously, because it's the name. And then it's Gills and G3, I believe, are the other two.
So... Ostensibly different timeline and storyline, three riders. Anything else I should know before walking into this next project?
That's as far as I know. The only other information really is more on the back end for us. So I guess the last little bit to discuss is that we are making a few changes to the formatting of the show moving forward.
We were overly ambitious in our original plans.
Yeah. So, you know, for Kuga, we tried to do story arcs and... It's been a lot on us, and so we're going to try and simplify things a bit more. Instead of doing story arcs, starting with Agito, one episode is one episode. Also, we are going to be changing our ranking systems a little. We're still going to take into account all of the things, design, character, personality, all of that, but we're just going to be giving one number instead of three and then compositing. We'll still give the combined, this is the official commentary track rating. The hope is that it's a more streamlined process for us and a more enjoyable listening experience for all of you. You know, if you feel so inclined, any feedback, letting us know if it's working or if it's not would be greatly appreciated.
I think that just about wraps it up, boys.
If that's the case, thank you, all of you, for having gone on this adventure with us. At the time of recording, we're almost at 500 downloads. I'm sure by the time this comes out, we will have passed that number.
That's cool.
I'm shocked. I thought it'd take a lot longer to get to that because this is a niche product in a niche product.
Joke's on you. My mom downloaded it 400 times just for me.
The data says otherwise, unless she's using a VPN.
She kept making email addresses on new VPNs.
Genuinely... For all of you who have been listening, thank you. It means the world to us. For those of you who support us on Patreon, thank you. Thank you so much for that. We'd still be doing this even if you weren't, but it's awesome that you are.
Probably spend your Patreon income on Kemi cards, not gonna lie.
Eventually. Right now it's paying for us to be able to be on Spotify.
That's fair enough.
Join us next week for Kamen Rider Agito. Episode 1, The Warrior's Awakening.
You can reach us by email at commentarytrack@gmail.com or on Twitter at commentarytrack. You can support us at patreon.com/thecommentarytrack, where you can get access to our running commentary on every episode and bi-monthly-ish bonus episodes like Kuga's special 50th episode.
This is not a large enough recording space for that.
Implication, there is a proper size for a recording studio that'd be perfect for that.
Yes, each of us in our own separate space.
Fair.
God, having to try and get the acoustics right in three rooms. Ugh.